Hey, this is Howard Phillips, and you're listening to Video Game Bullshit.
This is Tim Kitra from NBA Jam, NFL Blitz, and Mutant Football League saying, you're watching Video Game Bullshit. Kaboom!
Welcome to episode 118, Video Game Bullshit. What's up?
Hello, Jeff. What's up, buddy?
Whoa, I'm loud.
Sorry, dude. I'm a little amped up on NOS. I'm actually not cheating on my brand this time.
Oh, you're back on the NOS wagon. That's good.
Yeah, no, it's not good.
Hey, I'm on this NOS, which is just coffee.
Yeah.
Freaking crazy.
Is that U.S. Army
stuff.
Brand coffee?
Oh, yeah, Army
What's
brand.
The official coffee of the U.S. Army?
It looks like muddy water and tastes like turpentine.
Mmm, delicious.
The cadence on it.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a cadence. I don't know if you heard many cadences back in your Air Force time.
Only during basic training. That's it.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah,
just put a memory.
I had a few of those. It was fun stuff. Yeah. So this is like the first time in a while we got to do back-to-back weeks, which is pretty exciting.
I know.
Exciting. And we might actually get to talk about the homework that we can't pronounce. I can't even pronounce it. I can't even say the word right.
Well, we keep joking. Like, it's the second time in a row, the second episode in a row that we've got, like, this unpronounceable game. So I think we're just going to have to make that a prerequisite. Unpronounceable, unspellable games.
Yeah, this game is too easy to pronounce. We can't possibly play it. That'd be ridiculous.
We can't sign it. No.
Oh, no. It would be interesting to see feedback on this one because, you know, it'll be our playing experiences with it and how far we got or whatever we did. And yeah. Very interesting this week for sure. But
yeah. I'll keep my comments for that.
Exactly. Especially knowing different aspects of like who designed it and everything. It's gonna be wild.
Exactly.
It's gonna be wild. But what we usually start out with is how have you been, man? What's you been up to this last week, especially with last week's news, man?
Yeah, I know. So this is my first week of we'll call it unemployment. I'm not employed by, you know, I don't have a 9-to-5, so to speak. So I'm currently a full-time graphic designer. Freelance, and then I'm going back to school. For those of you who don't know the news, I'm going back to school, University of Nebraska, Omaha, to be a graphic designer. Both Jeff and I are self-taught. Everything that we've done has been self-taught, so I'm kind of, you know, wanting to go back and fill in the gaps and see what I'm missing out on. Maybe I don't know everything like I think I do. I don't know. But one thing that came out of this week that I wasn't expecting is, dude, my anxiety has been through the roof. And I couldn't quite figure out why until the other night where I'm like, all right. So typically my routine is, you know, I go to bed at a decent hour in hopes that I would get up like, you know, around 5-6 o'clock. Do my morning routine, get to work on time, work 8 hours, and then come home, and then I'll have time to do, you know, like other extra stuff, like work on my book or work on premium edition stuff or test games or, you know, whatever. But now I find myself with too much time, and my brain, the way my brain works is I know I've got all this stuff I need to do, but now I've got all this time, so I feel like I need to do everything all at once.
Heck yeah.
And my brain wants to explode. So I haven't quite figured it out yet. And I am definitely my father's son because he's the same way. I mean, we jokingly call him Turbo because, like, he's only got one speed. You can't turn it off. And he's always doing something. And that's
no
me.
I wonder why you like drinking NOS.
Well, yeah,
literally
that
Turbo.
That doesn't help.
The situation. Oh, man, it's a synonym of NOS, Turbo.
Yeah, so, you know, I take medication for anxiety. I have for the better part of a decade and a half, but it's not working, and I think it's just because of the change in atmosphere, the change in routine. I'm sure that's what it's got to be, but I plan on actually sitting down with a therapist and talking.
Yeah. About it. Well, like we had a quick call earlier in the week, and basically my recommendation is when you're moving out of your norm into something else. And this is like when I take leave from the Army or vacation. Yeah. I took like a couple weeks off before I moved out to Hawaii. And what I ended up doing was getting on my Google Calendar and actually using it like it's my work Outlook calendar and blocking off specific time to do all of the things. So when I was in the, you know, in the process of moving too. So I was like, all right. So when I wake up in the morning, I'm going to do a workout routine, something like stretches, yoga, something that, and then it's breakfast and coffee. And then I'm going to work in the morning time frame on premium stuff. And then I'm going to do a lunch break. And then I was working on storage unit stuff because I was moving stuff from my house to the storage unit. So I'm like, all right, travel time to the storage unit, do that. And then it's family time after that by the time I finish all that. And I gave myself 1 or 2 hours on the front of it and back of each one in case I got OCD and obsessed with one of the things and I moved on. I gave myself a lot of extra time. And that helped me out tremendously, just templating it out. And what it does is, and it's the same thing with a video game backlog, Tristan. So we have a million games we need to play. But if you actually go and categorize your backlog in a document and put it down and put pen on paper or in a document, it helps alleviate a little bit of stress. It releases endorphins. And it'll be the same thing if you can kind of construct how you want your day to work. That way you can sit there and release some endorphins, get rid of a little bit of your anxiety, and get a routine going. You have all this time, so you can like actually focus on some things that you've put off because of work, whether that be, you know, getting into fitness or getting into, you know, going off and visiting places you have wanted to visit in your area, or, you know, working on new projects that you may not have had time for before in a different genre than video games. Like, I mean, there's a million different things. And basically, it's whatever brings you joy. Just do that. Like,
yeah. So, I mean, the bottom line is like the chaos. I don't work well with chaos. Never have, never will. I don't know. So we in the Air Force, they kind of like put down our throats this like personality test kind of thing called the four lenses. I don't know if you ever had to do that before. Basically, you're
might call it something else, but
yeah, I'm sure they do. But like, There's blue people who are very emotional, green people who are very technical, orange people who thrive on chaos, and then gold people who thrive on structure. I am off the charts gold, you know, whenever I took that test. And yeah, that's totally me. So I don't work well with ambiguity. I don't work well with chaos. I need to have structure. And now that I've found myself with an abundance of time and no one telling me what to do, and I, you know, whatever. I guess I don't work well amongst myself. So I really do need to sit down and put, you know, pen to paper, like you were saying.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think nobody would be able to figure it out week one. No, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's the other thing is that, like, week one, now you're like, okay, yeah, I definitely need to some kind of structure.
Oh, dude. It smacked me upside the head. Like, I wasn't expecting it. I thought I'd be okay, but. Oh boy. Nope.
Well, and you think about it, like, there's no off time. Like if you're working on, because the projects that we work on take thousands of hours.
Yes.
And so like, you can't just sit there and not sleep for weeks on end and get it done real fast. Like that's not how that works. Like you have to do like normal breaks and take different pauses and work on other things. And I mean, even today, so today I was working on a couple projects this morning, and I actually took my laptop that I have here, and I took it downstairs so I could be more productive, because that way I can hang out with my wife while she's watching, like, she's been watching Big Brother live feeds.
Oh, boy. We used to do that, too. Guilty.
I call it whisper vision, because they're always, like, whispering on there and all that stuff. But she's watching that a lot, so, and I mean, I could have the, like, absolutely no lower interest than those things. However, the shows are interesting, though. The synopsis shows when they actually show them, because we'll watch Survivor and MasterChef, and all those shows are interesting. And it's the same thing with like professional wrestling. I don't watch pro wrestling shows, but I'll watch the summaries on like YouTube or highlights. And I enjoy the highlight shows. So, but while I'm not interested, I'll still go spend time with her. And so I've been working on projects. So even this morning, so I went downstairs and I was working on laying out. I'm putting in information. I'm doing information research for Switch Collector Year 3. So I did that for like an hour. This awesome thing, the Apple Watch tells me every 50 minutes to get my butt up and walk around. So that's
that's actually good too.
And it's a good mental pause time. So that thing went off. I'm like, oh crap. Okay. Yeah, so went there, had my coffee, ate a breakfast bar, and then went and worked on laying out my new magazine that I'm working on.
New magazine.
Yeah. And, you know, if people are interested, let's have – if we get one or two comments, like if we get a couple comments on social media anywhere, we'll know that you want me to unveil early what magazine I'm working on. Working on a digest-sized magazine. It's going to be cool. And I'll be able to get those out fun, and it's – and then definitely open up to the community for anybody who would like to write something. However, it won't be necessary, but if they want to, I think it'd be cool. It's gonna be super like super crazy creative fun layouts, something similar to what I did with the layouts for the Video Game Culture Chronicles books that I did. I did those 1990 and 1991. Those were my second and third books that I did, or it would be the third and the fourth books that I did after the complete NES, because that was technically my second book. But second and third books I self-published as a publishing company. Very, very low prints, mind you. And I've been working on 92 for years. I just haven't really gotten it down yet because, I mean, I've graded and evolved so much now as a creator that it's like I have to like just redo everything like I did with my NES book.
Well, and you're only one guy, so.
And there's like another company that – that has to be, you know, publishing games too. That takes up time. But I worked on the magazine layouts for a while. Got some cool stuff done. Got some ideas. Yesterday night I worked on the logo, which the logo looks clean. Yeah. Nice. But then I paused that and I was like, all right, cool. It's getting closer to lunchtime. Took a pause. Started playing the game that I'm going to talk about. Not the game of the episode, but the game I've been playing. Mm-hmm. And I've been in that game. And then I played that for a couple hours and then paused that. Like, so it's like taking little buckets of time. And I did that today, even on my Sunday. Yesterday for me, though, was a wash because I'm still active duty Army and we had to go to a rifle range. So that was half my day. And then when I got done with that, wife and I went to lunch, which was awesome. Little like outside enclosed surfing area. And we got to look out over it. But it's like you go to this place and it's like wave pool surfing.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And then behind it's the ocean, which is hilarious. There's the ocean.
Yeah. A wave pool in the ocean. Like, funny.
But it's controlled surfing. So you can.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can't predict waves. And especially in Oahu. Like,
Yeah. But we went over to that, hung out. And then I came home and took a nap yesterday. It was great. But that's a simple example, though. Like today, I even compartmentalized out my day a little bit just to make it manageable and make myself sane for the day. And I was productive with it, which was awesome. And I figured out a way to help streamline my Switch collector process for the book because I'm trying to knock it out. It's been taking entirely too long. I'm only like a third of the way done. I've been working on it for months. So I'm like, I gotta speed up the process somehow. So I think I figured out how to make it go faster in my brain. But yeah, man, it's a battle. You're gonna be having to figure out like what you want your bucket items to be like. So if you think about it from a calendar category perspective, when you go into Google Calendars, there'll be different colors that you can highlight things. So make a color a thing. So one color could be video game culture or video game collector's guide. That one. And then you can make another one, premium edition games. Then you can make another one, video game bullshit homework. You know what I mean? Like, And then you can make another one like, and I wouldn't make one for like family time or any of that stuff. But you can make one for like appointments or something so you can overlay cost appointments in there. But then you just do it so that way your bulk of your day is kind of laid out with how you want to run it.
Yeah.
And I think that will help. I think that will help tremendously. I didn't even work off a calendar in the military until the last few years, and now my whole day is structured. It's pretty crazy.
Nice. Yeah, I'm getting there. Right now I've just got a list, a very simple list, but I think I'm going to take your advice and try Google Calendar. But right now on my list for this week, I've got, let's see, workout, edit podcasts, finish the 3DS library, which I did, get Sheena to ship my books for Portland. She needs to send them to me. I'm going to hand carry some.
Yeah.
Ads for premium, edit Fall Direct. I've got some stuff I need to install in my my office here. I'm getting my COVID and flu shots tomorrow. I need to do an oil change, schedule a therapist. I need to record with Phil. And then I need to mail some stuff. And then I know I'm forgetting something. Whatever. I don't know. See, this is why lists. I have to have lists. Otherwise, I'm just going to like feel like I'm forgetting something.
The other way you can do it, if Google Calendars doesn't work, because sometimes like I can't work well with digital calendars. I use it because I can share it with people. But I have an analog calendar that I have. It's a day planner calendar. You can get them at Target, and it starts either in the middle of the year or at the end of the year. And I use that for work, and I actually have that sitting on my desk, and that helps me pencil in stuff all over the place.
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah. So there's two different ways to do it. And you mentioned, Fall Direct is coming. That's right, coming. Yeah, we're going to be doing our next batch of games that are coming to Nintendo Switch, which is going to be amazing.
Yes. Very exciting. Very, very good games, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's, man, people aren't excited about these games. I don't know what to tell them.
Exactly.
I don't know what to tell them, man. But here's the thing. We're still going to make cool stuff no matter what happens.
Damn straight. Yeah. Hey. Well, you and I, we're covered. It doesn't matter what happens to anything. I mean, we're still going to make cool shit, so.
Mm-hmm, exactly, man. Freaking crazy. Yeah. So I don't think I talked about one of the things that I had go on last week. Something that I got from my wife for our anniversary.
Uh-oh.
So I got the Atari 2600 giant Lego set.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the plus, the console. No, that's awesome, though, that Lego set.
This is cooler than the console.
Yes.
This is
100 times cooler than that console. Yeah. Yes, I totally agree.
Because, like, I grew up with that console, so it's really going to be really cool. I have the NES one that she got me years ago, so now I have the Atari and the NES. I didn't get the question mark block, you know, the classic Tristan question mark block.
Right over there.
Oh, I'm pointing to the light.
Oh, that light? Yeah. Well, the actual Lego thing is sitting right there. So.
Oh, yeah. But I never got that because it's, you know, Mario 64. They did a Bowser. I didn't get that. But
he's also sitting up there.
Consoles are amazing.
Yeah.
The one that I really liked, though, from the Mario set that I did get for Christmas one year, the giant airship. That is so cool. That's the only thing I like from that Mario Weird Oblong set is that.
Did you see what they actually announced 2 days ago for a Mario Piranha Plant?
Nice.
Yeah, Piranha Plant coming out of a warp pipe.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, and it's only like a $60 set too, so it's like totally manageable.
Nice. Yeah, I might have to mess with that one too. The one thing is my wife won't let me get another Lego set till I build one. So.
Yeah.
In order to get the newest Lego set, I actually had the throne room from Boba Fett. The, Jabba's throne room. So I built all that.
Wow.
That was fun.
So growing up with the Atari 2600, what games did you have? Which ones did you play?
So it was a hand-me-down. I had the Heavy Sixer. And I had Airspace Battle. And Combat, of course.
Yeah.
And I had Donkey Kong, the Coleco version of Donkey Kong, and Pitfall. Those were my four major games that I had. However, I remember getting later on, I got the junior version, the black junior Atari, and because the Heavy Sixer had like issues and stuff always, connectivity issues is what it was. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to jiggle the wire to make sure that it would like make connection with, because you use the little forks,
the prongs, yeah,
back
TV, those were rough, dude.
And then you'd have to like sit there and mess with it. And
the struggle was real, kids. The struggle was real.
And so we got the Junior, had better signal. But I got Mario Brothers, which was really
cool. Okay.
Original Mario. And of course, Pac-Man, which was so
terrible
bad.
Port.
Such now, a bad one port. Weird one I had that nobody really knew about till much later was I had a Zonix cartridge of Chuck Norris Super Kicks and Super Tank Battle.
Yeah.
There's one on each side.
Dual carts.
Nobody knew what the hell those were until like the YouTube era much later. And then people were like, know all about it. And I had a copy of that though growing up as a kid. And I was terrible at Chuck Norris Super Kicks. I'd always die.
But the only, I know we played combat. I know we did. But the only one that I can like,
I think I said air tank battles, artillery duel. Duel.
Yeah. All right. I think that was like one of those silver label ones, wasn't it?
Mine was black with, it had two different color labels on top and bottom.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. But I loved artillery duel because you're literally doing like the different percentages for your.
Oh, cool.
And so you can
I love those kinds of games. I didn't realize that was that kind of game.
Yeah, it's basically like Worms or whatever. Like.
Yeah, Worms or there was a DOS game called Scorched Earth. I don't know if you ever played that one. Mm-mm. I played the crap out of that one in DOS. Yeah, and then there was Pocket Tanks was another one just like that. That was
okay, I remember Pocket Tanks back in the day.
Yeah.
Definitely remember Pocket Tanks. So do you want to go into the news or do you want to go to what we've been playing outside of homework?
Let's go into the news first, I'd say. Yeah.
Okay. So first thing that I have in the news, are you tracking that there is a new Neo Geo Sega Genesis game that was released this last week? On Kickstarter.
I think so. So like I'm a part of this Facebook group and I've got this friend that's he's a doctor at the Mayo Clinic. He's like a cardiologist, so he's got some money. He's got like the biggest AES collection that I've ever seen. And so he's always like posting about these things and I want to say he posted about it, but I don't remember the name of it or anything.
So the game is called Demon or Daemon Claw.
That's right. I made fun of the name.
Yeah. And it looks cool as hell though. It looks like an action platformer, for the Neo Geo and Sega Genesis. I definitely backed it on Kickstarter at the AES level, because I love supporting new AES homebrew. And then there's you can do add-ons after it, and you can add on the Sega Genesis CIB as well. So
how much do they want for the AES CIB?
Ooh, I don't remember. I thought
it's
reasonable.
It's
got to
be like 6 or 7 or 8.
No, I thought it was like $300. Let me.
That's it.
Let me look though, real quick. Let's do some
real-time research.
Yeah, real-time research. Daemon Claw. Let's see. And it should say, it's the origins of Gnar you're talking about.
Yeah, that's what I was making fun of. I'm like, okay, awesome concept. It looks like a great name. A great game, but terrible name.
Yeah. For 400 euro or quid, whatever.
So you're talking a little bit over $500 probably.
Probably 500 bucks.
Between $500 and $600,
yeah. Something like that, yeah. So either way, though, not terrible.
No, especially considering like what those things resell for.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a no-brainer if you're like, you know, into investment video game purchases. That's a pretty safe bet.
And since I'm on my Kickstarter app, we can talk about a couple other projects that are that I have backed recently. There's one called Triple Jump. It's a platformer multi-cartridge for the NES. It's made by Morph Cat Studios. That's the studio that did Super Bat Puncher back in the day.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I don't think Super Bat Puncher's on here, but I think the wizard game that they have, the little wizard platformer. That is on here. Was it Mighty something? No, it's not Mighty something. Let me see if I can figure it out before I find it. Micromages.
Micromages,
The second quest of Micromages is on there. A Bobble is on there, which is a bubble-based platformer. And then there's a game called Space Gulls, and that was part of one of the Nest dev competitions. Bobble and Space Gulls were part of the NES dev competitions. And then Micromage's second quest was not released on cartridge yet. So you get all three on one cartridge. I assume they got like a little switcher, or you can hit the reset button to switch between them. Because I do know that there's a couple of different boards out there. So that's a pretty cool one that I got. And then there's one book author, Tristan, that I really like his stuff. And it's the guy who did the Vita zine.
Mm-hmm.
And he also did Vita Means Life. The guy's name is Sandeep Rai. And he just released a PS3 book. It says it basically does everything. PS3. They're these giant books. So this blue one right here, that is Vita only. It's a giant, thick book on Vita.
Wow. And
it's, again, a smaller form version of a book.
Yeah, yeah.
He did a PS3 zine as well as the PS3 book. Well, he just launched RPM, the unofficial retro PlayStation magazine. So the dude's obsessed with PlayStation. So he's doing that. And I like the way he writes. It's pretty, you know, straight and to the point, kind of like how I write and read. So it's pretty freaking cool. So that's one that I backed, though, was the magazine. It's only a couple bucks. And then there's another one that's two new NES games. And they're all weird names, Tristan. This is the weird name episode, I swear. It's called Nemulysis.
Oh, yeah, Nemulysis. Yes, of course. I am very familiar with that game.
Legiti Luda Livre.
Legat Luda Livre, yes.
See, you even have a different pronunciation than I do. That's another one that I backed.
Yours truly wrote the manuals for those, so I am very familiar.
That's why I backed it, Tristan. Got the board.
Take it from me. I got to play the games, obviously, because I'm making the manual. They're so good. John Vanderhoff is so good at making NES games.
He is. He's really doing Oratorio that we're publishing with Premium because it's yes. so good.
Like I'm not spitting hyperbole. Like I'm biased, yes, obviously, but I'm being truthful. They're really good games.
Well, exactly. And I think he just didn't think we'd be interested in publishing them or whatever, but it's like, yeah, well, I mean, if we play them, we like them. We would do a release. But there's a lot of games that he does, which is really freaking cool. I dig it. It's part of his Muleniverse, which is based off the NES game Mule. Yeah. M-U-L-E. There's one other thing, and I haven't pulled the trigger on it. It's on Kickstarter. It's called MES, a retro mini TV game console. And it's basically an emulator on a little mini TV. So it's like a little mini display, like one of them handheld mini displays, but in a old school retro TV. And I haven't pulled the trigger on it.
Is it like M.E.S? I'm trying to like search for it right now. I'm not finding it.
No, MES. MES. Retro Mini TV. Two-player support. It looks like a bootleg 1001 cartridge inside of a television. Like, it looks really bad.
I see it now.
Really bad.
Oh, no.
He only wanted this person only wanted $500 for the thing. They're making $12,000
now.
Yeah, just people just want this little retro TV thing, and
that's like, interesting.
Like it is. I mean, it's like $40.
Okay.
Like $40, man.
Throw that onto the Famiclone pile.
Yeah, like I mean, it's not FPGA, so I'm not really interested. I just thought it looked cool. And eventually I need to get, once I stop moving, I want to get an old school tube TV that looks like really pitchy and retro, but I'm good for now. Like I move too much. Something truly cool.
So kind of this reminds me of something that actually exists out there. There's this designer and it's actually in my video game console collector's field guide. Yes. The name of the company is Love Holton, and he's out of like Sweden. He's like the Swedish designer, Love Holton. Huh. He actually makes like retro looking but like new electronics. So he's actually made like a portable, but like he took a 13-inch PVM and turned it into a Famicom. He turned one into a Super Famicom. They're beautiful. I mean, it's functional, but they're also pieces of art. So if you look up Love Hulton, H-U-L-T-E-N, amazing stuff this guy makes.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's cool as hell. Yeah, so I mean, so the thing is like, I would rather support a unique guy like Love Hulton versus getting a Famicom clone.
Yeah, this looks like someone found something off of like AliExpress, and then they're like, oh yeah, I can shove something in there.
I mean, that's usually
no offense to someone if they actually did put more effort in than that, but that's just what it looks like to me.
No, I mean that's literally what Slopes Game Room does when he covers kick scammers. Like he'll like usually find this exact TV and Famiclone in AliExpress, and then it's like, yeah, this is a $5 or $10 thing, and they're charging $40 for it, making $30 a pop on people.
Yeah,
freaking crazy.
Too bad.
So another thing that I found in the news, did you know that they released within the last week the WWF Legends Challenge for the Nintendo 64? And it is a hack of WWF No Mercy. So No Mercy was modded, hacked.
Yeah.
To create a WWF Legends Challenge. You can play as all the old WWF dudes.
No way. Like, is this a physical cartridge or is this just a ROM so far?
Everybody that's posting all their mock-ups and their YouTube channels and all this stuff, they're all showing cartridges. I don't think it exists on cartridge yet, but okay. I wouldn't put it past somebody to make a...
Yeah, I hope our good friend John gets a hold of that one and makes a nice package, because I'll buy it.
Oh, absolutely. And this game looks really cool. I mean, because the No Mercy game was the best of that. It was the last release of the old AKI wrestling games.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have trauma because my save got erased multiple times. So I have the default. Yeah. But that being said, though, it would be really cool to play this Legends Challenge. Because I mean,
seriously.
They've been going crazy with these hacks for the WWF games.
Well, it's good to hear. I mean, especially with a game that has a good engine. So, like, I mean, I'm sure you know it. You obviously know because you're into the NES homebrew scene that every single year they put out a new Tecmo Bowl with updated rosters. That's, I mean, it's such a beloved game engine. You know, it lives on. So I'm really happy to see that this one lives on.
That is cool. And I mean, it's always fun seeing all the new pieces that come out. Maybe we'll have to do an episode on maybe like 2023, what new hacks have come out, like ROMs and modifications and that outside of homebrew.
Yeah.
Because it's fun. Because I know that there's a Super Metroid brand new game that came out. Like somebody took Super Metroid, overhauled everything, graphics, everything that came out. I have it bookmarked in my phone. I just haven't downloaded it to play it yet. I do know that there's one of those out there. So I bet if we do a little research, we could probably find a ton of cool stuff out there, which would be fun. That could be a fun episode later. I only have one more thing in the news. Did you find anything in the news this week? Or
I got one more. No, it's not really this week, but like something, you know, us talking about this kind of jogged my memory. It's something I haven't brought up before, but, you know, we worked with this guy on he did a Cathedral mini guide for us. Hand drawn gaming. So he had a Patreon for the longest time. So that's the last issue.
Yep. Unfortunately, this is the last issue that he released. Issue 6.
Yep. So pretty recently, he actually put out.
Here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got him back on my magazine rack. But I was sad to see it.
Yeah.
Too bad. He does beautiful work, and I wonder what he's got
next
cooking now.
Yeah.
Obviously someone's got him on contract or something. He's way too talented not to put something out.
Well, I will say, you know, we call Premium Edition Games the hipster artist of the game community, and we kind of do what we want. I think he is the definition of hipster artist. Like, he might just be moving on to something else he thinks is cool.
He could. And, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
You know what was funny was, so my first issue that I got, it was all mangled in the mail and everything. And that's why, and like a bunch of people had them mangled. And then he said, yeah, I'm going to offer an upcharge, or you could do it punk rock style and just order it and get the magazine shipped to you. And I'm like, I'm going to keep doing it punk rock style. So I kept going punk rock style. So I have like this one, no issues with it. And got mailed just like this in the mail.
Mm.
Just got sent like that in the mail. Really cool.
I got it shipped the weenie way with the backer board.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy like all the different aspects of it, the community. It's really fun. Yeah. Very sad though that he's stopping his guides, but who knows what he'll be doing next. I haven't reached out to him recently because I really like his art style. It's really like,
I'm curious to see if maybe the amount of people on his Patreon had something to do with it, because I mean, if you remember, he got, you know, he did that Kickstarter around the same time we were doing the Punch Out Kickstarter, or you were, Hagen's Alley, and he got over $300,000 raised or something like that, and then he got spooked because if Nintendo gets litigious after the campaign, you know, Kickstarter takes 5% of what you earn on Kickstarter, and then the credit card company that processes the payments takes 5% as well. So right off the bat, he would be paying them $30,000. Now, if Nintendo came after him and gave him a cease and desist, he's out that $30,000. He's not going to get that back from Kickstarter or that credit card payment system or company or whatever. So, you know, it got too big for him. It got too risky for him. And I'm kind of wondering if this was the same thing, because, you know, at the very beginning of the Patreon, whenever he was doing these issues, I bet he only had like 100, 200. But if you looked at his Patreon numbers now, it's in the thousands. So to be able to keep up with that, like sending out that many magazines, I bet became a little bit of a chore.
Especially if he was doing it himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because a lot of Kickstarters, they're doing it. I mean, I started shipping everything myself as well. And, you know, you take a little bit of risk when you have a company ship for you because they don't care like you do.
No, no.
But it was like me spending months shipping out books constantly and taking up a lot of space in the house. And because my Super Nintendo book got really, really big, and it was, I had to make a decision, and I did. I made a decision to use a company.
Yeah.
And I've switched companies a couple times because of issues. But now with Premium, we have our team doing some shipments because we have our own little house system going on, which is nice.
And they're shipping my console book, but whenever it comes to my game collecting book, I'm actually going to be shipping those out myself and taking up storage space in my house. But that's so
you're talking about anxiety. I think our shipping team got anxiety knowing how gigantic and heavy those books are.
Yeah. Can't blame them.
I don't blame them either, man.
It's okay. It's okay. I can handle it.
But the other side is that the company I used to ship to, I mean, my warehouse, they can handle it if necessary. So
true.
Not a big deal. Not a big deal.
Yep.
So one of the other things here, a Steam Deck update. I don't know how much you follow the Steam Deck scene or
anything. Not a whole lot, but I mean, you know, I follow Gizmodo and Gizmodo and Kotaku. So every once in a while, I do see some news come out.
So the biggest thing with Steam Deck right now is the newest update, Steam OS 3.5, has been released on the beta channel. We've been waiting for this for like almost like a year now, it feels like. It feels like we've been waiting all year for this damn OS update. And so there's this Decky loader that I have on mine, which is an app that people created that does things that we want the Steam Deck to do, which includes the randomizer that I have.
Yes.
But I've been using something called Vibrant Deck, which brings your Steam Deck up and makes it look like an OLED because it makes everything a little more vibrancy. Well, this OS update is going to allow for the vibrancy slider finally, but it's going to be programmed into the operating system, which means it'll run better than an aftermarket plugin that I'm using.
Good.
So that'll be really cool. It's going to offer improved performance with emulation is what everybody's saying. What they're talking about is, and I'm not familiar with all the technical terms, but they're talking about core threading, and you can apparently turn off certain settings that will make it utilize multi-cores with the emulation, which means that it should run flawlessly for GameCube, Wii U emulation, PS3 emulation. Everything should run like pretty damn flawlessly on DAC, which is really cool. So I don't do too much emulation on my Steam Deck. I typically use it for indie games, and I support indie devs on Steam Deck, and that's what I've been playing most of it. But I do have a version of Breath of the Wild on the Wii U that I can sit there and turn off weapon breakage on and just run around and have fun in a little sandbox. So I do enjoy that. And so I have that going on, but it runs fine for what I needed. I never had any issues. Now, why I won't update, Tristan? Why won't I update my Steam Deck? And so it is because it's in beta right now. So everything that's in beta is not fully tested in the main Steam OS. So when they do this, you can like opt into certain levels of updates, and you can do like beta updates, you can do super early updates, and you can do just like stable updates. I keep mine in stable because if I don't, then any apps I have installed, everything else won't work with the Steam Deck. So for example, I have like stuff that like adjusts shaders and it changes the imagery as I go through and like makes little cool things and rounds the corners and plays music when I go to the games, goes to how long to beat and shows how long it takes to beat a game.
But all of a sudden, if you update it, then none of that would be compatible with the 3.5.
Because it needs to be updated for the new stuff. So by the time it gets to actual release, people who write those codes usually have time to tinker and update their plugins. So once the plugins are updated, we're good. So that's why I'm not going to update, and I don't do the beta testing, because I'd rather have a stable Steam Deck than. And the other thing is, a lot of the features that they're running, because apparently a lot of it is going with on the TV and plugging into the dock, as well as this whole thing where you can do hard drive support and swap between hard drives. So if I wanted a 12 terabyte emulation hard drive plugged into my Steam Deck dock, I could do that, and when it docks it in, it loads up those games, and when you undock it, it gets rid of those games from your deck. I'm not sure how well that works, but I would want it to look pretty damn flawless for me to utilize that.
Want
like console style. So we will see, because I mean, there's a lot of companies that are releasing these. There's like one online that's a 12 terabyte 100,000 game thing on Amazon, and it plays like PS2 games and PS1. It has everything on it, and it's just like every single game is on the thing. It's illegal as hell. I don't know how they're on Amazon.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like playing whack-a-mole at this point.
Yeah, there's so many out there. It's just like it's insane. That's where I just stick with supporting indie developers on Steam and Switch games that I want to play and.
Emulation's fine for tinkering. That's a whole nother topic. The ethics behind emulation, when it's okay, when it's not okay. And that's a topic for another day. But
and for like an ethical perspective, like I'm okay with games that are old and off the market.
Yeah.
However. We're talking, go back to earlier in your news and you figuring out like the scope creep of having every single game at my fingertips. I kind of don't want that. I don't want to have to worry about having every game ever at my fingertips, because then I'm going to play nothing. It's called the paralysis of choice. When you can do everything.
Choice nothing. Paralysis.
Yeah. When you can do everything, you end up doing nothing because you don't know what you would like to do.
I don't know what that's like, Jeff. I've never experienced that ever in life.
Like right now.
Yeah, no.
Well, and that's exactly it, though, is that you got to have a little bit of limitation in your life. And my thing is that I have, you know, certain things with emulation on it, like my analog pocket, which I have some Game Boy stuff on. But I do like on Jack that it has that deck roulette. That is amazing, because I can go in any of my folders and click the little roulette button and go. And I can play whatever I want to play in whatever category and just make it choose something. And usually that's how we're getting our bullshit. Usually it's a game we can't pronounce. So,
yeah, well, so far so good.
Yeah.
I don't know. Xeno Hell was okay. I mean, we can pronounce that one and spell it.
Yeah, so. That was good. Yeah, maybe this week we'll, if I can't pronounce it, maybe I'll hit the button again.
No, that's way too easy to read.
Yeah, I can. Now, we will see, though, because all these games that we play look cool. Those are the ones that I've been supporting. It's games that I feel like are in my wheelhouse that I think look cool, and they hit all the different pieces. But then when you play them, it's hit or miss, depending on what the game is.
Is that foreshadowing?
Foreshadowing. Well, before we talk about our bullshit game of the episode, what have you been playing, Tristan? And then I'll talk about what I've been playing. And maybe it's the same game. Maybe it's not.
Oh, wish I had it in front of me. So I am a huge Binding of Isaac fan. Up there, I've got like Binding of Isaac figures and stuff like that. And pretty recently, they actually on the Nintendo Switch did a physical for an offshoot of The Legend. It's called The Legend of Bumbo.
Yeah, I was wondering about that game because I saw it pop up on a website to order, and I didn't order it yet.
Yeah, so you have to order it directly from Nicholas, who is the publisher for Edward McMillan, who makes The Binding of Isaac and Super Meat Boy and Tiny Barbarian and a whole bunch of stuff. No, he didn't do Tiny Barbarian. Sorry, that's another Nicholas game. Oh, yeah, maybe Nicholas he did. Okay.
Nicholas. Yeah, Nicholas did publish it, not Edward
McMillan. Yeah, yeah, that's where I got confused. But anyway, Edward McMillan is behind The Binding of Isaac and Super Meat Boy, and he made this puzzle game that's an offshoot in the same universe as Isaac called The Legend of Bumbo, where Bumbo's this hilarious character who only cares about his coin and his trash and whatever, and someone steals his coin, so he goes after him. And it's basically like a match four kind of a game, but with like spells and stuff. It's really cool. It's really fun. I'm really enjoying it.
It's because I know didn't Shovel Knight also do like a match four game as well?
Oh, I don't know. If they did, I have no idea.
Something. It was Pocket Dungeons or something like that. They did one too. Yeah, like there's a lot of games that when they get like a little popular series, they'll do like a fun puzzle game. Hopefully it's cool, if it has a good loop to it, that's what makes it fun.
It does so far. Like you know, you play it with Bumbo and then like you unlock another character and you go even further down the basement and it just keeps going further and further and you fight bosses and it's awesome so far.
Oh, that's cool, so.
Yeah. It's what I was hoping it was.
Bumbo. So mine is a little bit bigger of a game.
Oh, yeah?
So it is a role-playing game that is basically Chrono Trigger combined with the timing of Super Mario RPG.
Really?
And it's pixel graphics, amazing score, might be game of the year.
Which one's it? I mean, it's probably on my radar. I just don't know which one you're talking about.
This one is Sea of Stars.
Yeah, okay. A lot of people have been talking about that right now.
People have been talking about it. I wanted to play it because everybody's saying it's freaking amazing.
Yes.
Dude, it is so good. Like, the story is great. It is chill, too. It's not difficult at all. It's very, very relaxing. You can put on these little modifiers that it gives you, too, or, like, it'll refill your health after every battle, or you don't have to. And you can do other things like that. So, like, there's, like, little modifiers you can do, and then there's also, like, all the classics. So you go through, and it tells the whole story of your two main protagonists. One has, like, you know, light, and one is, like, sun, and one is moon magic, basically. And then it like immediately as you start playing the game, and then it immediately goes like back to where your kids, and then you got trained to become these warriors, and you train it all, and you have this little friend who absolutely reminds me of like Barry, premium little like nice guy who's over there just trying to take care of everyone, and he ends up getting hurt and actually gets stabbed in the eyeball.
Just like Barry,
as a kid though, as a child. Wow. And the mage like sends him back to the main headmaster. Mage sends him back, and then takes the two and puts them in seclusion for a long time. Ends up being 10 years that they train, and then you finally get back to where you were, and you know you've finally link up with your Barry and. But no, it's like you link up with it and then it unlocks more and more of the story, but also with the gameplay, and it complements it. The gameplay loop is awesome. Makes me want to go through. I haven't really grinded at all. You don't really need to because you see all the characters on screen. But they do pop back up after you. I don't know if you have to go away a certain amount or you have to save, or I can't figure it out like how it triggers it. But you can have the enemies reload again. You may just have to go to the world map and back or something. But so there is an opportunity if I have to grind. There's ways to do it. But the boss battles are really cool. They have the combos just like in Chrono Trigger. And then there's multiple levels of combo.
That's not done enough, man. Like Chrono, that system in Chrono Trigger is so good, and they don't do it enough in RPGs.
And then you have time-based attacks. So every time you attack, you can Mario RPG it and time it to get a double. When they attack you, you can time it and dodge a little bit or block. And when it does multi-attacks, like say one character is going to shoot spikes down, you can dodge three times. You could time it to dodge at all three. It's like the more you learn about it, the better you get equipped at the game. And I've only played it today for a few hours, and I'm addicted. I think it takes about 40 hours to go through all the little side stuff and beat the game. 40 hours is what everybody is calling a short RPG. For me, that's immensely.
Really? 40, huh?
That's like intimidating to me.
Well, after I spent 250 hours or whatever it was on Tears of the Kingdom. Oh my gosh.
If I wasn't in traveling mode, because that was on my calendar that I was doing when I was moving here, I wouldn't have had the time to pour as much as I did into Tears of the Kingdom. But but no, I can't recommend Sea of Stars more. That's an S tier title, like 100% S tier title.
And what platforms was it released on?
Switch. I'm playing it on Steam. Okay. I'm pretty sure it's on PlayStation as well. It has physicals already. It has a Japanese physical on Switch, and people are holding out for the English one, but I haven't seen an announcement. So there might be an opportunity there for premium. Never know. But I'm pretty sure they're pretty locked in for physicals.
Oh, I'm sure they are, especially with the success of it.
I think it was a Kickstarter back in the day too. But it is really well polished. It's awesome.
I'm looking up right now on Amazon to see if it's available.
I think it's PlayAsia that you have to get it. And the artwork on the Japanese box of the PlayAsia one looks freaking amazing. I'm definitely going to buy it. I'm going to wait to see what kind of physical editions they have. And I want to get hopefully they do like a retro Super Nintendo box or something like Chrono Trigger. And that will be that. And if not, hit up premium if you're watching, developers of Sea of Stars, as you are not. But if you are watching, we will do a Super Nintendo box release.
And while you're at it, developers of Game Center CX, hit us up, please.
Yeah, we're still waiting. Still waiting, Game Center CX 1 and 2. We're waiting on you.
Yeah, Areno, I know you're watching this right now. Shinya Areno, sir. Cacho.
Come on, the Cacho. It was funny, though. After we talked about that on the episode, I went and realized I hadn't gotten new episodes since I moved. So there was another 8
episodes
that have been translated since then. So some really fun ones that I haven't gotten around to watching them yet, but I will.
Sea of Stars looks great. I'm looking on PlayAsia right now. That looks beautiful. That's so Chrono Trigger. It's ridiculous.
100%. It's a new. It's a brand new story. New character.
That's awesome. No, I see Barry.
Exactly. It's our Barry. He's like such a nice guy too. And there's a cooking mini game, and there's a fishing mini game in there. Classic RPG tropes. I think the fishing mini game so far is just to get more cooking ingredients. But and I've only gotten a few accessories, only upgraded my weapons once, but it's definitely classic JRPG trope. It's really good. It's really good.
Yeah, that'll be a must play for me then.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Add that to the backlog. And
the thing is, that wouldn't be something that we could impartially put as bullshit homework because it takes so long. We would feel guilty recording before we finished it.
Sure.
And the thing is, we could just record and do a bullshit homework episode on a game like that, but then we're just going to be still playing it and talking about it afterwards, like we did with Zelda. Yeah.
How often does a Zelda game come out? So that was completely worth it.
Yeah. So they'll be accepted.
That magnitude.
So once you start playing Sea of Stars, if you get obsessed, maybe we'll do an actual full episode on it. But so yeah, Legend of Bumbo. Awesome. What rating would you get Legend of Bumbo so far?
I'd give it a solid B so far.
Nice. Yeah. B-Title's good.
Mm-hmm.
B-Title's fun.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, I'm biased because I'm a huge Binding of Isaac fan. So as a Binding of Isaac fan, it's an A, but I would give it a B just to be impartial.
Exactly, dude. So, you ready to talk our bullshit homework?
Yeah. Hopefully you can pronounce it because I can't.
Maesteri, Ruins of Desnif. Maesteri is what we will call it.
Bless you.
Yeah. It was developed by Success Corporation, which is crazy, and Studio Sizensen, and published by Digimerse Incorporated. It was released April 14th, 2021. The game is described as a Metroidvania, and essentially with spring wire action, 2D side-scroller that uses wires to explore ruins in all directions. Steampunk retrospective that connects ancient history and modern times, and you eliminate the global crisis during the rumors through investigative action, is what this says. So the story, the year is 20XX in a dark forest in a certain country. The kingdom's intelligence department discovers the source of Maesteri, a magical substance with a miasma that emanates from this world. The kingdom decides to dispatch the Royal Special Relics Investigation Department, a specialized organization, to investigate the source of the Maesteri. You're a member of the Third Research Department's research team. And basically, the animals go berserk when this Maesteri is around them, and modern technology loses its power, essentially. In addition, the ruins are being exposed by a group of thieves known as the Desnif. Obviously, it's like Desnif, seeing the devastation, your character, Ariel, I could feel
goodness gracious.
They just had the weirdest names ever.
I think they grabbed a handful of like Scrabble tiles and mixed them up.
They didn't.
Yep. Oh yeah, Desnif. Mm-hmm.
So the features, according to Steam, switch between multiple ammunition and weapons to fight enemies and pass traps to strategically advance your investigation. A steampunk and ruins investigation story with a cool protagonist, full voice acting throughout. I didn't hear any voice acting. There are many grimoires, relics, and key items to acquire skills. Aim for full completion. And the story will change depending on the order of areas you investigate. What will happen to you? So, Tristan, what happened to you in this game?
I wasn't... Okay, I get it. And yeah, when they say a spring wire, oh boy, it's springy. It's real springy. So if you've ever played like Bionic Commando, and you're expecting to have like a claw kind of a thing to like swing
or Super Metroid with the wire, like a Metroidvania.
Or Super Metroid, or like even Super Castlevania 4. You know, like hanging on with the whip and like swinging around. No, it's more like you're hanging on by a bungee. Yeah, dude, it's kind of unwieldy.
It's ridiculous.
It's chaotic. It could use some polish, I think. I didn't really find the gun combat very satisfying, or the sub weapons like with the grenades or the boss fights. I mean, it was.
Well, here's the thing. Do you know what my major gripe was right from the beginning? Because I wrote down Metroidvania that seems very unpolished. It has a decent story as you go, and the graphics are solid. However, translation is very bad. Translation is terrible. But here's my thing, and this is why I feel like other things feel unpolished. The sound effects are non-existent. like you, they don't sound on the version I was playing, at least. There's no sound effects. Really? So you can barely hear anything that's going on.
Oh boy, I didn't notice that.
Guns, everything was like lukewarm quiet. Like it's, yeah. I could hear the music great, and I didn't hear any sound effects.
Well, let's talk about the music for a second. The music was looping and kind of maddening at points. Really needed some work there. And yeah, unpolished is a very good word for it because it has a lot of potential. The UI is incredibly polished, but the gameplay is not at all. Well,
like the controls, just with the joystick movement itself, you can't hold directly running while attacking. You'll pause and stop.
Yes.
And so that's very frustrating when you're trying to jump and fire and then you stop moving. The D-pad does fix that, though, if you use just the D-pad versus the analog. It does fix that. The jumping and grappling, I wrote, doesn't lend itself to the level design. So this is my issue. So I had to stop playing it. I played it, like, during the week. I had to stop playing because I got frustrated as shit. And I was playing and finding stuff and, like, going through all the caverns. And there are lots of platforms where, like, there's this one platform, and then I got to, like, jump up and grapple to it and then jump over to it. But you have to use the stupid springy bungee thing to flip yourself up.
And you got, like, little to no control over it, too. So, yeah, like you were saying, I mean, there's all sorts of, like, environmental traps, like spikes. And they expect you to traverse this big, long expanse, and then they'll have, like, torches over it. That you're supposed to like be expected to like spring along, but it's so hard to control. It's not fun. It's kind of like an unintentionally difficult game, just because of the game.
If they would give a little guidance, like you hit the button and it just automatically hooks to it, I think that would have been a lot better. There was this one spot. I don't know if you got to it, but there's these spikes that just fall and crush. And so there's so I had to, and they put a damn treasure chest underneath it, which contains an item that you have to get that upgrades your character. Mm-hmm. But the thing is there's a tiny gap. And when you hit the button, you can't control your jump like you would in a Metroidvania where you can control the height based on how long you press the button.
Yeah.
So when you press it, I just go over there and I tap the button and it goes boom and it just dies. And it just, and the thing is there's no sound effect. So it's not like there's like a, it's just dead. And I died like 10 times and I stopped playing it. And then I went back to it and still doing the same thing. Now, if you run along the top to try to avoid the spikes, the thing goes up and crushes you because you don't have enough time to run across unless you time it exactly right. And you have to use the stupid spring thing to jump over it.
Mm-hmm.
And the spring thing is slow and unwieldy.
Yeah. And I mean, the spring is the whole, it's the gimmick of the game. And it's not done very well.
No, so, is
everything like, suffers because of it.
What were they thinking? Is my question.
Yeah,
because it is unfortunate because if they would have figured out a little bit better of a reasonable level design, because you said it's like a big vast areas there they want you to traverse around, but then there's like blind jumps and you just fall down and it's there's spots to kill you and it's just
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of it could have been alleviated if they had just changed the simple physics of the way that spring hook, is that what they called it,
works? Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, whatever it is.
And did you notice that the R and L buttons will
shoot like
one direction?
In the directions, yeah.
Yeah.
And then both of them together goes up.
And now I didn't mess with the weapons, so maybe there's a freeze bullet that'll freeze the spikes from falling. I don't know. Maybe.
I never came across it.
I got a bunch of flame and bullets and other stuff too. But because the controls are so bad, I don't even really want to bother going back because it was just like not fun to play.
And in Metroidvanias, like it always feels like it's missing if you don't have a double jump. But this game actually like throws the double jump at you pretty fast. Like I found it within the first like 10 minutes of playing.
Yeah, I definitely found the double jump. The other thing is it said on how long to beat that it takes an hour to beat the game. I don't think I don't think that that's the case. I think it takes way longer. I think that's an error on there because there's no way I was playing
it
and I didn't even. Unless there's a way for me to just jump to the end and there's no other bosses.
Yeah. And the bosses, you know, speaking of bosses, like, I know that, you know, like, in Metroidvania style, in Mega Man style, like, you come across, like, where the boss is, and then it'll, like, put you, it'll confine you to an area. And then there's, like, a pattern that the boss follows, and you just have to, like, react to the pattern. Well, it was pretty uninspired. Every boss that you come across, so.
Well,
even that's not really a bright spot.
And we could think about it in terms of, like, the, you know, Skull Jor story from last week, where it was, you know, made by a single developer, and it was this kind of his first game. And so we were harsh on that game, even though it was developed by, like, probably a beginner developer. So for a beginner developer, it was good. This is made by Success, who made
whatever. I know. Like, you boot up the game, and I saw the name Success. I'm like, holy crap, this has got to be pretty good.
They worked on, what, Cotton, right?
And yeah, they did the Cotton series. Like, that's a really successful, awesome shmup series. So, obviously, they've got some people that know how to make some games. I don't know how involved they were in this one. Maybe they just did the UI.
Just remember this game if Strictly Limited, who has released some of the Cotton games, if they release this physically for Switch, because they do. I mean, hopefully they fix the programming.
Hard pass, guys. Hard pass.
Bad, man. I'm just disappointed.
I'll give it a C minus D plus.
Yeah, I'm at a D. I'm at a solid D. I just didn't care for it at all. Not going back to it. It will be removed. It won't be even something that I'm going to cover in my Steam or Indie Gaming Gems book. I wouldn't cover it.
You should have an article in your magazine. Wait, did you say what the magazine was about? I don't want to spoil it. I'm sorry. No, you didn't. So I better shut up.
I could cover a game like My Asteri though in my magazine.
Yeah.
There's your hint. But yeah, no, there could be a section for that. Like, stay away.
Yeah, there you go.
That's hilarious.
Whew, that was a close one.
That's all good. Hey, if people are excited enough to track us down, bring it. Hilarious. So, shall we go to the next one?
Yes, sir.
And are we doing regular, or are we going to do budget?
Let's do budget this time. Let's change it up.
All right. We're going to do the testing budget. And, PSX. Project Starship.
Oh, Project I can pronounce Starship. That. No, I'm sorry. We can't play that one.
It says 3 hours. This music sounds like chiptunes.
Project Starship.
Heck yeah. Right, sounds cool. I don't know if this picks up in the microphone, but yeah, the game looks really... Project Starship, huh?
Cool.
Music sounds cool. Let me add it to my favorites for now. That way I can work on getting rid of my Asteri from existence.
Man, Success. I am so disappointed in you guys.
Yeah, like, what the heck, man? Like,
I was so excited.
Yeah, and I didn't even know when we were looking it up, like, that it was that game. Like, that was by that company or whatever. Project Starship was released in 2020 by Panda Indie Studio. It's a roguelike shooter, so this should be fun.
Hey.
Roguelike shoot 'em up. Looks like horizontal shoot 'em up.
Cool.
Oh, no, vertical. Vertical shoot 'em up.
Vertical? Okay.
It says Zombie Hitler has a... Zombie Hitler has a giant eyeball. What the hell is this game? And then it looks funny. This might be a really cool one.
Okay.
And it is definitely not a budget game. It's $15. Okay. I don't know why it's under budget. It's $15. Maybe it was on sale when I was looking into it for research for the book. Maybe it was under that. But it's definitely not a budget game. It's $15. So
meh.
Still cool. I want to play some Project Starship though. Looks like we get to go back to shoot 'em up world, Tristan. Yeah.
Hey, if I get to kill Zombie Hitler, let's do it.
Did we went from like shoot 'em up to Zelda like to Metroidvania like to back now to shoot another shoot 'em up? We went horizontal, now we're vert. So zombie Hitler with a single eyeball. Man, should be cool, dude. We got any other topics we're gonna chat, or should we call her a day?
Been an exhausting week, man.
Yeah, let's call her a day. Do a nice little short episode today. Wait.
Well, one thing, and whenever we got on the call, Jeff heard the machinery in the background. So I've been working on my book ever since the Kickstarter wrapped up. I'm just trying to put all the pieces together and finish it up so that we can get it to print.
Yeah.
The one thing that I decided to do, and I already mentioned this, but I finished up the Nintendo DS and the 3DS libraries in the last couple of days. And the DS library ended up being I try and look at as many sources as possible, because lists, grain of salt, definitely grain of salt if you look at a complete list of something. But I want to make sure that I do my research. So I try and combine four or five lists, and then I have to scrutinize everything, which is what I had to do with this one. And it was super tedious. It took me weeks on and off to do the Nintendo DS, but the final count is 1,735 games in the U.S. library. And then the 3DS, I'm actually printing individual little guides a la carte if people want them. The 3DS is 421 in the U.S. library.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
I may have to borrow you if I ever do the complete of those series. I don't know.
Absolutely.
I don't know if I want to do it though, Tristan, because I have to do all regions and it hurts.
Oh no. Yeah, and all the eShop stuff, and yeah, good luck with that.
Well, because you know what I do with my discerning eye is I to pick games that we can enjoy and as English speakers. So I have to play all the Japanese DS games and find out which ones are unique that were not released in the U.S. So I do U.S., then U.K., then Japan, and I have to find the.
And there are a lot of Nintendo DS games that came out in Japan that are worth playing. For instance, if you are a fan of Elite Beat Agents,
Game Center CX2.
Yeah, well, Game Center CX2, yes, but that's on the 3DS.
No, that's on the DS.
3D. Oh, no, I'm thinking of the third one. I'm sorry.
You're right. There's a third one on the
3DS. I'm thinking of the third one. Sorry about that.
We got your wires crossed. It's okay.
Yeah, I did.
You've been looking at thousands of games.
I know, I have.
It's okay.
But if you like Elite Beat Agents, which is a rhythm game on the DS, it's actually based on a Japanese game called Osu Tatake Oendon, which had one game and a sequel. Both of them are super fun, and you don't have to know Japanese to play them.
And I would consider, if Elite Beat Agents and that game are the same, but that game has different content, I would include both, because it's interesting enough to buy both.
Oh, it is completely different content.
Yep, exactly. So that rabbit hole is dangerous as hell. I mean, I'm going down it for Sega Genesis. I already did that research, and it was a lot, and I have to redo it all now because I'm going to do it unabridged and with more interesting stories, and I have to redo the whole layout, and I'm okay. I won't be coming to you for a long time.
That's fine. One more thing about Osu Tatake Oendon, just so people actually play it if you get the chance. There's a stage. So, the Elite Beat Agents and Osu Tatake Oendon, they're this cheer squad that, cheer people on. So, you're cheering on some kid that's, studying for an exam, and then he passes the exam because you did well in the stage. Well, there's this hilarious stage in the first game, Osu Tatake Oendon, that there's a bank robber who robs a bank, and you're cheering on this down-and-out horse that does horse racing. So you're cheering on the horse. It wins the race, and then it chases down the bank robber and captures the bank robber because you did well in the stage. It's so funny in Japanese. I love it.
So it's like a similar humor to the WarioWare series, as you're playing.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, that's ridiculous, though. I think it's going to be funny as hell.
Yeah.
But no, I'd like... That sounds like it's right up my alley, pun intended, Hagen's alley.
Yes.
But no, that's where it's man, that rabbit hole is deep. I mean, I'm doing it for the Switch, and it's already going to be taking half my life to do it my way.
I know. And that just illustrates the value of those sorts of books that you put out, that you try and shed light on these games that otherwise people would never know about. Who the heck has ever heard of Osu Tatake Ondon unless someone told you about it or you read about it in a book that highlights those types of games? So exactly. That's why those things need to exist.
And the thing is, I've been trying to make more things that have that interesting spec to it, where it has unique things like your video game console collector's field guide, where it has these unique systems that nobody's ever freaking heard of. That stuff is interesting. Mm-hmm. And then it's the interesting stories behind it that mm-hmm. I like to add too. That's where I've been moving toward. And you're going to see it in my NES book, where it's going to have the interesting Nintendo stories that we've all lived, which goes in there and kind of puts a face to it. That's the fun stuff right there. I remember
it really is.
Like the Oddities book when I did all the homebrew stuff, those resources don't exist because websites don't stay up forever. And so, unfortunately, a lot of the information, even where I resourced and sourced everything that I got for that book, is gone now.
So as we've seen, Nintendo Age went away. Hey, guess what, guys? Atari Age just got bought out. Maybe it's going away, too. Those resources aren't going to be around forever. Those servers aren't going to be on forever. So, you know, putting it to paper, actually publishing this stuff so that it's out in the public domain is so important. It's so important.
So so I do want to get your anxiety going, Tristan. So how many games and when are you going to do the video game collector's feel guide for Commodore 64? Let's get it. All of
that's not happening. Hell no.
There's 3,000 games that start with the letter A.
Try finding a good list on that.
I like jokingly say, you know, we had NES homebrew that took over after the Nintendo. Like Commodore 64 was homebrew before there was. They were just programmers. And those programmers went to develop for games. There might be close to 100,000 games for Commodore, like, at this point.
It was the Wild West back then, so... No thanks.
Wild the West is a game for the Commodore 64.
I'm sure it is.
Your book. It needs to be you're going to have the definitive guide that's going to be 8,000 pages, Tristan. It'll be perfect. All like tiny little images, too.
That'll be my next one. I'll have to retire from life before I get that one out.
We're going to have to change your memoirs to take it to the grave. I won't do Commodore 64.
Yeah. No way.
That's the problem with the microcomputers, man. There's just so many games. And
I know.
It might be fun to do an interesting version, like what's interesting from the cover, like the best of the best or something. But
from that aspect, from that angle, yes, that's totally doable. But, you know, we were kind of talking about it. Maybe it was last week, maybe it was the week before. But like if you're talking about a complete Switch library and then you're like, oh, but not those. Publishers that, you know, did limited print. Well, then what's the line? You know, the same thing is said for the Commodore 64. Like, okay, so like only under a certain print run? Well, that data doesn't exist. So you have to include everything.
But if they had licensed releases, which they did not, but if they had licensed releases like Nintendo did, then there's actually a quantifiable. So with those limited prints, like premium edition games are licensed by Nintendo and they are official releases. So it's like you can't count something that's official if you want an official list. Like a
that's
list
right.
of official games. If you do it by region, that's cool. Just do US, do your European, do Japanese region only. That's cool. It's everybody's world is their oyster, but if you want a complete US, it has to include everything that was released in the U.S. ecosystem for Nintendo, the ecosystem, not the eShop necessarily, not the whatever, but it's like if you Nintendo calls it the developer portal. If everything is released on the physical publisher portal in the U.S., those would be the list.
Yeah, if you want a complete set of Nintendo Switch games that came out in the U.S., you have to have a robot named Fight. You have to have Rain on Your Parade. You have to have
Shantae and the Pirate's Curse.
Everything, guys. Everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have to have all the limited run releases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is a damn nightmare. But they are U.S. released. They yes. have the ESRB, and usually you go off of the ESRB. However, that's tricky too because some of the releases in Asia have an ESRB on them. So yeah. it's you have to do.
Well, yeah, and then those worldwide releases too, the ones that are released in the UAE that have ESRB.
There's those too, and you just got to look on the back on the code is what you would do for those, but. Mm-hmm. You could just argue if it has an ESRB, it's good. If it has English language, it's good.
Yeah.
I like the English language and can be enjoyable. But my Switch book, if I did my own personal what I would go for, it would just be all the cool and unique games, which I would probably leave off a game, though, that Tristan might like or that, you know, a Barry who loves his visual novels may like because I wouldn't be putting all the visual novels in my book. But somebody else would love those games. So. That's where it's easier just to put them all in there and highlight. Of course, I'm going down with the Switch Collector, all the different limited items, all the different, like, which is insane. And then the first volume, the stretch goal, everybody voted and they wanted the Japanese games that don't have English. So I have to do that in every volume going forward. So I have every game ever released. And it is insane. It is gross.
I can't wrap my head around that. I just can't.
Yeah. And the thing is that I'm right now, because I think it's like close to 360 games for year three physical. And that's English speaking. Mm-hmm. And then I still got to do the whole Japanese section and I still have to do all the research for the eShop games that I included. All the interesting eShop games.
Yeah.
That did not get a physical that we would like to get a physical. And I already once I lay it out, that is the time. So if a game gets a physical announcement after I've done the layout, I'm not redoing the book. So it'll just stay in there. And then
I just had an idea. So you mentioned the eShop, not for the Switch, but for the 3DS, I think I'm going to actually dedicate a page to the ambassador downloads that were given.
That would be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, the only way you can get some of those is through the ambassador, right?
Yeah, that was the only way you could get some of those.
And the thing is, those are cool. Those are part of the history, the legacy of the system. I feel like it's interesting. It's not physically preserved, but there are ways that people have been able to sideload all of those games onto modified consoles. So, and that's the one thing. In the end. You'll be able to utilize talented members of the community that will allow us to play these games in the future. So that includes even the online stuff. If there's enough of a need, people will create their own servers for the different games to play online. So there'll be ways. If there's a will, there's a way. Mm-hmm. But I do like the idea of making it easily accessible. And I mean, what we do, you and I, is we want to make sure we pour a bunch of love and give some soul to these physical releases, give them some personality, some character, make it what the developer envisioned their perfect physical release. So that way they could be proud of their release physically for the rest of their life.
Dude, if Fred is not proud of that release, I will eat my hat.
Ooh. Yeah,
it's okay. I have another one up there.
Okay, I'd say Fred was very particular. He was very, very much his baby.
Dude, he's gonna be so happy with how that turned out. There's no way he won't be.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's really good. I love how it turned out. We'll see if it is up to his lofty standards.
Yeah, he's got some lofty standards too.
Yeah.
Good boy.
The thing is. Can't really blame them when it's their baby, when they made it.
That's right.
Yeah. And honestly, like, you know, it's a little more time consuming when we have a developer that's as passionate as a Fred would, or with Abe Lee Pixels and the developer Miguel. He was very passionate too. It takes a lot longer, but in the end, it's a really outstanding release.
It's worth it. The product
has a feeling of that game in it.
Yeah, it's so polished, and it's just like the game. Every aspect of the game, you know, as a developer, they polished it to their standard, and they wanted the same for the physical release, which you absolutely can't blame them.
Yeah, And I mean, you and I, we have our own style for the releases that we do, which is unfortunate because we've tried to bring on other team members and they just haven't, you know, to our style and made it look like we do, which is unfortunate. It would be lovely if we found a couple more designers that could, we could like duplicate ourselves a couple more times. That'd be cool.
Yeah, no.
Or some of the team members who do, they just were too busy. We had to get a couple of those that got too busy. And we moved slow. we moved real slow. So either way though, I've been having fun with it. So that's all that matters.
It's always fun.
Exactly, dude. So shall we cut it here?
Sure.
So we are going to be playing PSX Project Starship, or is it Project Starship X? Either way.
I think it was Project Starship PSX.
Yeah. So that's going to be a fun one for the Bullshit Homer. Thanks, everybody, for checking us out, and we will see you next time.
Later, guys.